Hello and welcome to Practically Speaking, an informal discussion with the leadership of North Point Community Church, where we try to address in a practical way the challenges of leading a local church. This is the fifth discussion in a series on our seven practices of effective ministry. Today we're going to talk about practice number five, listen to outsiders, about how you can provide an appealing alternative to the unchurched people in your community. My name is Lane Jones, and I'm joined as always by our senior pastor, Andy Stanley. Andy, from the very beginning, North Point has always had the unchurched as its focus.
Yeah, Lane, you were there from the very beginning. We knew because of our resources and the talent on our staff that we were going to be successful as a church. We started with about 1,000 people. That's a huge start for a church plant. In fact, I don't really consider us church planters because of the way we started. But the thing that was different is we stood up in front of all those people that very first night in that information meeting and said, Atlanta does not need another church. And so If you're wondering why in the world are we starting another church, it's not about Atlanta needing a church, but Atlanta does need environments where believers can invite unchurched friends and relatives to hear the gospel presented in a compelling way. And even if they disagree, to want to come back the next week. So we knew it was all about creating relevant environments to capture the imagination of unchurched people. And that's really been the driving force from the beginning.
Right. And we're also joined today by Reggie Joyner, the Director of Family Ministry here at North Point and co-author along with Andy and myself of the Seven Practices of Effective Ministry. Reggie, the premise for this practice that we're looking at today really came out of a discussion that you and Andy had early on in our history.
Sure. As a matter of fact, Andy was referring a while ago to the start of our church and the 1,000 or plus people who showed up. And one of the things early on that a lot of people began to question and begin to wonder about is what exactly would our church look like, what it would be like. And I just remember this one moment in time when several families had decided that they wanted a certain program or a certain thing to happen at our church. And they came to me and began to, you know, just put pressure on to make that happen. And we had felt like it was not something we wanted to do. And I just remember going to Andy's office and saying, I don't know what to do here, because if we don't do this, I think they're going to leave. And if they leave, we're going to lose income. We're going to lose, you know, some important families in our church. And I just remember what he said. And Andy, I'm sure you remember that day. He said, I don't ever want this church to be about who we're going to keep. I want it to always be about who we're going to reach. And that just solidified in my mind, you know, the permission that I needed to allow these people to walk away for the sake of other people down the road that I knew we were building this church to reach.
And the interesting thing is, a couple years later, most of those people came back.
That is true.
They came back because they went to other churches that were more insider focused and realized it's never going to happen here. The other thing that happened is some of those families came back because they met unchurched people, felt the need to bring them to church. And when it came down to where were they going to bring them to church, they wouldn't take them to their churches. They brought them to us because they knew we'd designed environments with the outsider in mind.
One of the most unique things that I have noticed over the years in our church is the fact that outsiders actually many times bring outsiders to our church, and that there are a lot of people who go to other churches, who are members of other churches, but when it comes to their friend that they need to bring somewhere, they'll show up at our church on that Sunday with their friend because they can't take them to their church.
Right, and you're right about the outsiders bringing outsiders. I'm constantly amazed at how evangelistic, in terms of inviting people, unchurched or previously unchurched people are. They're the raving returners. They're the ones who haven't bought into the theology, but it's a come and see, come and see. You know, It's, you know, Andrew taking his brother to Jesus. I'm not sure he's who he claims to be, but you got to meet this guy. And when a church can create that kind of dynamic, over time, the pressure from outside, from the insiders begins to wane.
Okay, guys, you're using some internal terms that we talk about all the time around here, but some people may not be familiar with the way we use them. Insiders and outsiders. Talk about what we mean when we use those terms.
Those are actually biblical terms. Twice in the scriptures, unchurched or unbelieving people or people outside the faith are referred to as outsiders. But you're right, Lane. These are insider terms for us. We don't get up on Sunday morning and say, no, you may be an outsider.
Right.
And we don't usually even use the term seeker, though obviously that's appropriate. So, yeah, when we talk about insiders and outsiders, it's kind of the insider's language.
And this is terminology, actually, that works for any organization. Any secular organization understands the tragedy or the mistake over time of listening to each other and not looking at their customer market and listening to the needs of their customer market, because over time they'll become inward and they'll become stagnant and fail to be effective in reaching the people they're trying to reach.
Yeah, any company, any business that quits listening to the customer or to the potential customer eventually loses market share. And the reason, or one of the reasons the church has been so marginalized, is we've lost huge market share because we, for the most part, just talk to ourselves.
And Andy, it's really easy for that to happen in a church setting.
Yeah, you know, one reason we just touched on, especially for the guy with the small church, or he's new to town, new to the church, or even a church planter, is it's the insiders that pay the bills. It's the insiders that ensure that the pastor and his family eat and live indoors. And, you know, that's a number one priority for any family. So consequently, you know, the insiders have the influence.
And over time, we end up disregarding the voices of those on the outside.
You know, it's really worse than that and more complicated than that. And this is such a big truth. Outsiders have no voice in the local church because they are outsiders. And so if we only listen to the people who have access to us, we never hear from outsiders. And everybody listening to this presentation knows that it's always the insiders that complain. The outsiders just don't come back.
Right.
But the insiders who have a vested interest, they've invested in the church, their children are there, they're the ones with the voices, they're the ones that write us the letters and send us the emails. So consequently, this whole principle of learning to listen to outsiders is something we have to be very intentional about. Because, again, outsiders have no voice inside the local church.
And yet a look around the country tells us that most churches not only end up focused on insiders, they really start out focused on the insiders.
Yeah, we made a decision at the beginning, and I think this is a very, very important decision as a church, that we did not want to pattern our church after other churches that people were not attending.
Right.
That seems very profound, but it's really pretty simplistic.
Exactly.
Because too many churches and too many students are coming out of seminary and they're being taught models of how to do church, but they're being taught the models that really aren't outsider sensitive or thinking about outsiders. And therefore, we have more and more and more and more churches being developed like the churches that people are not going to.
They continue not to work, and we continue to replicate the model. And we've all been in this situation with our backgrounds, but we attend, or, you know, somebody designs a church for insiders and then stands up Sunday after Sunday and tells us we need to bring outsiders. And we don't, because we know they won't like it.
Absolutely. Several years ago, I remember some friends of mine wanted to start a church in a city, and they met with me. And I'll never forget, you know, as they began to describe their church, I thought, there are 50 other churches in a 10-mile radius who are already doing what you're talking about doing. So why do that again?
Yeah, no city in America probably needs another church. But again, the crying need is for environments that are conducive for church people, the insiders, to invite their outsider friends to be introduced to the body of Christ, the community of Christ, the community of believers, and then the message of the gospel.
And when you start pushing at the reasons why outsiders aren't going to church and thinking through those reasons, then you start strategically thinking about creating a church that will actually attract the people that, for whatever reason, are not interested in the traditional or standard organization.
Right, and not to put too much of a business face on it, but we would laugh at a businessman who said he's going to continue to create a product that's readily available and yet nobody wants.
And statistics are just staggering. I mean, when you start talking about the fact that in our country, you know, there are 100 million Americans who don't go to church, and, you know, there are unchurched people in the United States, so many unchurched people in the United States, according to Barna, that if you were to combine all of them together, they would make the 11th largest nation in the world. And so, you know, somewhere along the way, we've got to decide to make that a priority. And 70 to 80% of kids, think about this, who grow up in church, walk away from church at 12th grade into college and don't ever come back.
And, you know, this really substantiates what we're seeing all over the country. The unchurched market is so much larger than the church market that churches who begin to listen to outsiders and who build their programming around the outsiders are the largest and fastest growing churches, because there's so much more market share in the unchurched community.
Now here's a thought, and this is just, I remember us having some of these discussions about where would be the biblical principle to just really focus on outsiders and think about outsiders at the expense of insiders. But one of the classic stories was when Jesus talked about, you know, the 100 sheep. And
right.
99 were found and one was lost, and said the shepherd needs to leave the 99 and go find the one. Well, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people that are lost. We're talking about keeping, you know, our arms around the 30 or 40% and not going after the 60%.
Right. If he left the 99 to go after the one, how much more quickly would he have left the one to go after the 99?
Right.
And
absolutely.
That's the situation we're in America.
Right. So really, then, it ends up not just being as much about listening to outsiders, but is purposefully sometimes ignoring the insiders.
Yeah, and that's – Andy alluded to that just a few minutes ago. That's the part that probably creates tension for the average pastor, the average minister. Because, you know, and I know that's a strong statement to make, to ignore insiders. But typically, there are moments in your ministry, moments, you know, in what you do as a church leader, that you have to intentionally disregard what an insider says he needs or wants for the sake of reaching an outsider. And that is a very difficult decision to make. But the principle is basically this. Again, I don't know how many years of ministry combined we have, but we can never think of anyone ever on the outside who's called up and who has said, you know, if you would start doing this or if you would change this, I would start coming.
Right.
But we have hundreds of illustrations, sometimes every week, of people who call up and who say, you know what, I go to the church and I wish you would change this or I wish you would do this. You're going to hear from the insiders.
But the outsiders have no voice. And so we have to learn to find out where their voice is and listen. One other thing on this subject, we may be painting this in too much of an extreme. It's not that you never listen to insiders, but what we had to learn and what every church planner, every pastor has to learn, you have to figure out which insiders are safe to listen to. Because in every local congregation, there's going to be a core or a nucleus of people who understand this principle and who are dying for a place to be able to involve their unchurched friends. But usually it is a silent minority. And oftentimes, just like the outsiders, they have very little voice and influence in the church as well. But I think in every church in America, there are groups or pockets of people who are, again, who wish they could find a church where they would be free to invite unchurched people and it'd be a safe place. So it's not that we never listen to insiders, but we've had to learn which insiders to listen to and then ask the question, how do we elevate their influence and how do we broaden their influence in the congregation and in the church community so that their influence is felt and so that those kinds of people attract similar kinds of insiders.
You're exactly right, and I would just make the point again. One takes intentionalism. The other, you don't have to be intentional about it at all.
They will find you.
Right.
Andy, for the guy who's listening to this today, who's a church planter and he's just starting out, what would you say to him to keep him from waking up one day and realizing he's totally insider focused?
Yeah, it's a tragedy. Guys wake up and realize they don't like the church they started.
Right.
That somewhere along the way, somebody or somebody's hijacked the vision of the church. And when I talk to church planters, I always say, put off as long as possible becoming an actual legal entity or constituting as a church. Because when you do that, you hand off the influence and you hand off the power to elders or a board or a steering committee or whatever you call them, and you don't want to hand off the vision and the power of the church until you've found the right people. And in every single church plant, the first group of people to the table is almost always the wrong group. They're disgruntled church members from some other church. They're always insider focused, and you just don't want to hand off the ability to make decisions and dictate the direction of a church too early. So the longer you wait, the longer you have to find the insiders whom you can trust, and that's the group you want to give the power to. Otherwise, you wake up one day and somebody has hijacked your vision and is always good-intentioned insiders.
And it's better to stay small for a longer time than to grow in the wrong direction.
Exactly. And it's also better to take the criticism of people that say, why are we waiting so long? When are we going to elect elders? You just fend them off until right. the right group comes along.
Okay, guys, let's get practical. Practically speaking, what's involved in listening to outsiders?
Well, I think, first of all, you've got to learn to speak their language. I think this is a common practice. If you were going to be a missionary and you were going to go to the mission field, I mean, you would try to study the trends, you would try to learn their language so you could step into their culture and begin to speak to them in terms they can understand. And too many times, if we're honest about the churches we attend and a lot of the way that we have structured our programs, we are speaking again to insiders, and the people who are coming from the outside to the inside aren't really sure what we're saying and why we're saying it, and they get confused.
The only thing I would add to that is to say, you know, the best way to learn to speak to outsiders is to have relationships with outsiders. I understand the dilemma most pastors are in, because without any effort, we wake up one day and we are surrounded by the insiders. They are our friends. They're our children's friends. They're who we're in small group with. And we have to work hard to be in environments with outsiders. But the best way to learn to talk to them is to be in environments where they personally, at a relationship level, are talking to us.
So basically what you're reminding us of again is this principle that over time we naturally fall into this groove of speaking a language of a subculture of the friends of ours who are Christian. And if we're not intentional about moving again into the outside world and having friendships of people that are outsiders, then we'll lose the ability to connect with them effectively.
And what happens in a local church happens to us individually. It's the same
exactly.
thing. One of the things I'm very excited about right now in my personal life is Sandra and I have a small group, as we always have. And right now there's a couple in our group who has never been to North Point. They don't go anywhere to church. We know them through Little League Baseball, and they knew all the other couples that we were forming this group with, so we invited them. So it's, again, I sit there week after week, not in a worship service, but in my home with six couples, and there the outsiders are in my home sitting there. And to listen to them answer questions and process what we're studying as a small group, it is a weekly reminder of what they think, and how they process oftentimes what we assume everybody understands because we're insiders.
So when you get in your study and you begin to work on your message, and you get up on the stage and you begin to present your message, aren't you thinking at times about those individuals in the room?
When I know they're sitting there, when I see somebody walk by, when somebody walks up and says, hey, today my boss finally came or my sister finally came, it's as if, to me, they're the only ones in the room. And even as hard as I've studied and prepared with them in mind, suddenly, you know, the bar is raised because there they sit and that's who I have to talk to.
And yet one of the criticisms that we often hear when it comes to speaking to outsiders is that you have to water down the truth in order to really speak to an outsider.
And again, I that's such a fallacy, and again at two levels. I mean, I've got outsiders sitting in my small group where we're doing Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a matter of having to dumb things down or leave things out. It's just a matter of making them aware that we know that they're there and doing everything we can to bring them along in the conversation, whether they ever decide to buy into what we believe.
You know, that's true, Andy, that there are times in your messages it's like you just stop and address specifically the outsiders.
Yeah, in preaching, and we've talked a little bit about this, in preaching, I'm preaching primarily to insiders. And I'm assuming the outsiders are listening to this dialogue and this conversation. And when I get to a subject matter or a verse or something that I just know for outsiders, it's like either, huh, or yeah, or hey, that's why I'm not a Christian, or that's why I don't go to church. I try to stop and say, you know what, today you're here and you're not a believer, you're not buying into any of this. And this is one of the reasons. And again, all I'm doing, I'm not trying to convince them. I'm just saying, I know you're there. I know this is what you think. And I don't blame you for thinking that. And then move on.
So it's important to learn to speak their language. And another thing that we say oftentimes when we talk about listening to outsiders and the practical application of what that looks like is that we need to listen to the experts. That we need to basically tap into the billions and billions of dollars that marketing experts around the country have already spent to reach a target audience that we're trying to reach as well.
Yeah, the language of the outsider is all around us if we can just learn how to incorporate it into the local church.
Right.
And the reason we've come up with programs like Kid Stuff and even some of what we do in the Upstreet and our student ministry is because we teach our staff, and we say this over and over again, you know, watch MTV, watch Nickelodeon, watch Disney, see what the experts are doing to capture the hearts and the imaginations of children, because if you learn from them, then we can take a timeless message that we think is timeless and life-changing and again package it and present it in a way where it will connect with them as well.
Right, and the good news of that for guys out there like me is that God will redeem the thousands and thousands of hours you've spent in front of the television.
Absolutely.
It was an investment.
It was.
You were just doing research.
I was being mentored by Gilligan and the rest of them. It was great.
One thing, too, I would say, and I catch myself doing this all the time, because a lot of us are such insiders in terms of having grown up in the church. I'm a pastor's son, and all our kids are going to be preacher's kids, and, you know, men and women listen to this. You know, you grew up in church. None of us think that we're churchy. Even the most churchy guy I've ever heard doesn't think he's churchy.
Right.
And the only way to know is to listen. And I can't tell you how many times I've listened to myself and I'm listening to the CD thinking, why did I say that? You know, where did that come from? All of a sudden from my past, you know, somebody lobs in some big giant three-syllable word and I'm thinking, you know, lose that. And there are times after the first service, Lane, that you or Julie will come up and say, now, you know, when you talked about this or when you mentioned that, are you sure? Or, you know, the way that came across. So I think having people around us.
I just remember the first time we ever did kid stuff.
I wasn't even going to bring this up.
I know, but I just remember.
I'd forgotten, even though it was 9 years ago.
I knew somebody was, so I thought I might as well. Eight years ago, you know, you got the kids on the floor and the parents on the floor. They're right out of the community there in Alpharetta, and they're sitting around in this cafeteria of the school. And I come to the end, and I just remember saying, okay, every head bowed and every eye closed.
And you said it real fast, every head bowed, every eye closed. And I saw people looking at each other like, what did he say? Not bow your head and close your eyes. Every head bowed, every eye closed.
Programmed for years.
And did we say that? And did we dog you about that at all?
No, not at all. You guys were very,
but
very
the funny
unkind.
Thing was, there were four or five of us around the back of the room. Immediately we looked at each other and immediately recognized it because we've established a filter through which we evaluate what we say and what we do. And I think that that's what's important for people to establish, because then it becomes clear when you violate this principle.
And I need help, and obviously Reggie needs help, and I think all of us need help. And, definitely. Lane, you know this too, when we've had outside speakers come in, so many times after the first service, we gingerly try to go in and say, okay, you know, we told you and we told you and we told you that 30% or 40% of these people are not believers, and many of them, this is their first or second time in church. And we know you came in here knowing that, and you think you were talking as if you knew they were there, but okay, here's two or three things you can't say, or here's two or three ways to say that differently, because again, we all need somebody to help us filter that stuff out.
And it's such an important value here that there have been people that are amazing communicators, people who've known nationally, that we have not been able to invite back simply because they can't hear it when they say it.
Billy Graham was, I think he was brokenhearted.
It was hard not to have him back.
Yeah. That's a joke. He's never been here.
And another thing about that, too, that I just want to make sure that everybody understands is we're not talking about not offending with the truth. We're talking about just using terms and phraseology that people have never heard, and they don't even understand what it means because it's in our subculture.
In fact, half the Christians would define some of those things differently. They don't know what they mean either.
Right.
And in terms of being offensive, and I think we've all learned to do this in our communication, even at the kid stuff level, at every level, to say the following may be offensive. You know, the following may be reason for you to never become a Christian. You know, the following is why you don't go to church. So we're going to say it, and we're
absolutely
not going to dumb it down, but we're going to wave a big red flag and say, we know this is offensive. And, you know, whenever I talk about hell, I always say, if God would close his eyes and allow me to erase any part of the scriptures, these are the parts I would erase because it bothers me as much as it bothers an outsider. And just saying that, I think, keeps them engaged with where we're going in the message.
Well, the Bible talks about how the truth will offend. And the Bible also says, Paul says or implies, that we should not unnecessarily offend others for the sake of the gospel.
Yep.
When it comes to this idea of listening to outsiders, Andy, our Buckhead campus actually came up with a very novel approach to this, didn't they?
This was great. You know, churches, doing surveys in churches is not a new idea, but generally, who do we survey? You know,
the insiders.
The members, the insiders, the people who can vote. At Buckhead Church, which is our satellite campus, they did a survey for people who had attended five times or less. They asked a lot of questions, and they got it down to two categories. People who had attended five times or less who considered themselves unchurched, that means they went two or three times a year, and the people who'd been there five times or less who considered themselves churched, and I forget the number of the frequency that they used to determine that, and then they drilled down to discover everything they could about the unchurched person who had been attending Buckhead, what they thought, how they processed the morning, how they processed the children's programs, the music, and everything. Again, to make sure, in spite of sheer numbers, that we were really talking to outsiders in a way that engaged them and made them want to return. And it was incredible feedback. It was great.
Andy, going back to something you said earlier, there is a group of insiders that we are very interested in listening to, and those are those insiders who are focused on reaching their outside friends.
Yeah, one of the ways I think that we've elevated this value is through our little phrase, invest and invite. In fact, our whole evangelism strategy is invest and invite, and it's kind of humorous to me sometimes. People will say, well, who is your minister of evangelism, or who's over evangelism, or who leads your evangelism department? I always say, you know, if a local church needs an evangelism department, you know, I think that's trouble.
Yeah.
And so our whole strategy is invest and invite. That is, invest in the life of an unbeliever or unchurched person, and then at the appropriate time, invite them to an environment that's conducive for where they are and where they can get their questions answered. And we have said that for 9 years, so much so that it is part of the terminology at every level in this organization. And what that does, when you raise the bar and when you make that the marching orders, then people who are engaged in investing and inviting are very sensitive when we do things that would potentially offend the people they're inviting. So we've got an army of people that keep us honest in this regard.
Nothing creates a better filter than the average man who's been investing in his friend for 6 months to come to our church, and all of a sudden his friend tells him on Saturday, oh, by the way, I'm coming Sunday. And when he walks in and he sits down with that friend next to him, he's looking at everything we do through the eyes of that friend. He's listening to everything we do through the ears of that friend. It creates this incredible filter for us to evaluate everything we do through the heart and the life of the kind of insider that would bring an outsider.
And then you find those people and you put them in leadership, because they will help keep the process clean and help keep those of us in leadership who have the most propensity to lean toward insiders, because we work here, it helps keep us honest.
Right. And it really creates a partnership between the church, between the organization, as it were, and the people, in really creating those environments that are going to meet the need.
A couple of things here. One is, we've debated for years, you know, what is the age demographic of the right kind of person who needs to attend North Point? Is that a 30-year-old? Is that a 40-year-old? Is that a 50-year-old? And we've decided it's really not an age. It's more of a mindset. And it's the mindset of a kind of man or woman who wants to have an environment where they can bring their unchurched friends. And that crosses over all kinds of demographics.
Last January, I did a series called Go Fish, which, you know, we did a 6-part series on evangelism, or, you know, the whole invest, invite thing, with the fish in the auditorium. You know, we were in the aquarium talking about fishing, basically, and, which is tricky. But again, there's a way to do all that. And one of the messages I gave that I think really helped, again, clarify this for people, I talked about the title of the message was Fishing Buddies or Fishing Partners, and talked about the relationship of the church in the evangelism process. Because we grew up in a culture that said, Andy, you know, Lane, Reggie, go out, win somebody to Christ on your own, bring them to church. And what we've said is, no, the church, the local church, is a partner in the process. You invest, you invite, we create an engaging culture and an engaging environment that will make them want to return. And when you have both of those things going on, what it does, it empowers and motivates your people to do evangelism. Beyond that, it empowers and motivates unchurched people to do evangelism in terms of investing and inviting. So, you know, it's a little bit different twist on evangelism. We never tell our people, go out and win people to Christ.
We
always say, invest in the relationships, bring them here, and let us do what is most difficult for you. Let us bring up the topic, and then you go home and help them fill in the blanks.
And this sets a lot of people free to be able to do what God has really called them to do, which is to plant the seed, or maybe to nurture, or maybe to water.
Simply answer questions.
Yeah. In my family, the fulfilling thing for me has been watching my kids at every stage of their life feel the freedom to bring friends to these environments. And in some cases, I've got one daughter who can take them and explain the plan of salvation without even batting an eye, because her personality is wired that way. I've got two others who, they're just wired different. And they love the fact, though, that they can bring them here and hand them off.
Right. Or get them
else.
In a small group.
Absolutely.
Or wait for those 4 or 5 times a year when we give a straight-on invitation, ask people to stand, no heads bowed, no eyes closed, everybody looking around, and no soft music. And all over both auditoriums and in Buckhead, people just stand and give their hearts to Christ.
And you know something? When you hear the baptismal testimonies and you hear people talk about their small group leader or talk about their friend who introduced them to this church, you have this sense that everyone who is a part of that process is enjoying the benefit and the fruit just as much as the person who closed the deal.
That's right. The one that invited him, the one that led the starting point group, the one that closed the deal with him, and then the guy baptizing him.
Absolutely. As difficult as all this sounds, a few years ago, every church in America was actually put in the position where they had to use this filter to evaluate what they were going to speak on Sunday. And it was the Sunday that followed September 11th. I know for us, in the middle of the week, we had to revamp everything. We had to change our plans. We had to change our content. We changed everything about our service because we knew, we assumed that people who weren't coming to church that Sunday were going to show up. And they did. And I remember sitting with Sarah watching the news that night and watching synagogues and tabernacles all across the country and hearing all of these word bites, you know, from priests and pastors. And I remember Sarah saying, "Dad, I am so glad that we go to the church that we go to because I'm so glad we got to hear what we needed to hear today." And I just feel like that if we would think in terms of every Sunday being a Sunday, potentially, that the unchurched are going to show up, it would just change the way we look at everything we do.
And the truth is, every Sunday there are people with a 9/11 mentality showing up at our churches. There's been a tragedy, they're broken, they are hopeless, and they usually don't go to church, and they're going to give it one shot because they don't know where else to turn. And on that Sunday, the churches in America were as prepared as they've ever been because they assumed the outsiders are coming. And if we could just maintain that perspective as local churches, I think a lot of things would change.
Well, guys, thanks so much for spending this time with us today, and thank you for joining us for this installment of Practically Speaking. If you'd like to read more on the 7 Practices of Effective Ministry, the book is available through this website. For more information on North Point Ministries, you can go to northpoint.org.